Broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, the nonprofit agency providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. Donation information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org. Blood donation. It's about life.
Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 22nd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982.
Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the show, Harriet Williamson, Travis Stansel, Henry Frain is at the controls. Tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll be doing our monthly show on personal finance, and we'll welcome back, after an absence of a couple of months, David Sinnoh. He's clinical professor of finance at the U of I, and for a long time has been stopping by monthly to talk about money management. If you have questions about financial planning and investing, planning for retirement, perhaps it might be one of the things that you're thinking about, you can call in and talk with Dave, and he'll try to help you out in the first hour. In hour number two, we will be talking about American history and about some of the events that led up to the Civil War. And our guest will be Michael Holt. He's professor of history at University of Virginia, and we'll be talking about a book that he's written that looks at the debate over the extension of slavery into the West and the political forces that were involved in that and how eventually that plunged the United States into civil war. He's written a book on this. It's titled The Fate of Their Country, Politicians, Slavery Extension, and the Coming of the Civil War. We'll talk about that tomorrow morning in hour number two. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week, and we offer you the opportunity to call in, make comments, ask questions. During the next 15 years, it's estimated that more than 70 million married Americans will be facing retirement. And chances are, a lot of those people, if they think about the various challenges that they will face in retirement, chances are the thing that they're worried most about, and there's reason to be worried about it, obviously, but one of the things they worry most about are financial issues, making sure that they have the financial resources to be able to be comfortable in their retirement. However, our guest this morning, Dr. Marianne Vanderveld, says that when you look at couples that are approaching retirement and then the kind of difficulties they face in retirement, in fact, the biggest problems aren't financial in nature. They really have to do with the kind of potential emotional conflicts and psychological adjustments that couples have to make, particularly if you have a situation here where either one or both of them were working outside the household, and now suddenly they're with each other a whole lot more than they were before. And there are a lot of unexpected challenges that need to be met. People need to start thinking about living their lives in different sorts of ways and perhaps doing some rearranging in their relationships. Those are some of the issues that we'll be talking about this morning as we talk with Dr. Marianne Vanderveld. She's a psychologist, a human resources expert. She's also founder of the Seattle-based Institute for Couples in Retirement. And she has a book that deals with the subject that's titled Retirement for Two. The subtitle is Everything You Need to Know to Thrive Together as Long as You Both Shall Live. It's published by Bantam, and it's out now. So if you're interested in reading up on that subject, you can head out to the bookstores and look for the book. And of course, your questions and your comments are welcome here on the program. 333-9455. That is the number for Champaign-Urbana, where we are. Also, though, we do have that toll-free line. And if you'd happen to be listening around Illinois, Indiana, wherever the signal will travel, or if you're listening on the internet, as long as you're in the United States, you may also use that our toll-free line. And that is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, Dr. Vanderveld, hello.
Yes, hello.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, what is it that got you interested in investigating this subject of the kinds of changes that people go through, that couples go through, and what that means for their relationship when they retire?
Well, I've been interested in this subject for a long time. In some ways, it's the logical sequel to the book I did in the 80s called The Changing Life of the Corporate Wife. And because that explored what kinds of lives corporate couples had and the role of the spouse in that process, I started to think about this at least 10 years ago, and I began to gather stories from my clinical practice and from my friends and acquaintances, and I realized gradually that that this is another big life change, probably one of those things like the 7-year itch and the time when kids go off to school. It's a shakeup in relationships. But I guess what really pushed me into gear was my husband's retirement about 7 years ago and the changes that were happening in our lives and in the lives of our friends who are in their 50s and 60s. So overall, I guess it came from a lot of sources.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the book, you present some survey conclusions. That is what they've gone out. I think this was it was Prudential, the company went out and they sampled people. they took a group of people that were maybe in the run up to retirement, and they just asked them, well, what do you think? What do you think retirement's going to be like? And in very high percentages, in various kinds of ways, they talked about how great that it was going to be, and had apparently very high expectations for particularly for what it would mean for the two of them to be able now to spend more time together without having to worry about the obligations of work, and perhaps, you know, somewhat less than when they were younger, also worrying about the obligations of family.
Right. I think it's actually rather charming that people have such high expectations and think it's going to be fun and games and really look forward to it so much. It's no surprise because we keep our nose pretty much to the grindstone for at least 40 years of our lives, and the thought that we're going to be having more time and not having to worry about work is really very exciting to a lot of people, and it is a positive time, but there didn't seem to be in that study very much thinking about the shakeup, the downsides to what happens to a couple when they're faced with a lot more time together and these little annoying habits that they've maybe just kind of discounted in each other for all these years can become really big. Plus, they have all these decisions to make about where they're going to live, how they're going to fill their time, how much togetherness they're going to have, what their sexual relationship's going to be like, how their relationship involving money is going to be shaken up, how their relationship for their adult children and other relatives and friends are going to have to be reevaluated, and how they're going to have to deal with medical issues and legal issues. And that study did not indicate that there was very much thought about those issues. And what happens in a lot of cases, one other study showed that after the first year, people did get happy or pretty happy in their retirements, but the first year was often pretty miserable time because they hadn't really anticipated all of these things that were going to hit them as a couple.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that even couples who would say that they managed to spend a lot of time together would probably be surprised by if work is taken out of the equation, how much time then they really do have to spend together, and how now that they are confronted with a big block of unstructured time, or that is, now they can, assuming that they have the financial wherewithal, that they don't have to worry about that, and that their health is pretty good, that they now have this big bunch of time that had been taken up by work, and they have to figure out what to do with it. So that's sort of one issue. But just simply the sheer issue of now you're going to be together a whole lot more than you were before. And it seems to be something that takes people by surprise.
Well, and often one part of the couple has a very different idea about that than the other one does. And I suggest that couples think about a togetherness continuum from 1 to 10 and initially at least put themselves on it. You know, like I would like to be a 3 and have a lot of independent time, and my spouse might want to be an 8 and be together all the time, and that's where the conflicts can ensue. And then also that position that you want to be at on that continuum can change over time. I mean, you might think that you want to spend a lot of time together at the beginning, and then but you're bored with each other within a couple months, and you're sick of talking about the kids already, and so that position that's satisfying for both people on that continuum may have to be negotiated. And some people talk about they don't like a leash on them. They expected, you know, that everybody's going to want the same things, want to be together a lot in retirement, but it begins to feel like a leash when your spouse says, well, where are you going and when will you be back and, you know, what about me? So there's often a difference on that. I have 20 New Yorker cartoons in the book, and the one that the publisher chose to put on the cover is one of my favorites, too. It shows two older people ice fishing, and the kind of grumpy old man looks at his wife and says, who said that you should share all my interests? So, you know, some people think, well, I expect my significant other to do everything I want to do, but that's not very realistic, and there are all kinds of ways to work that out. I mean, I like the concept of parallel play, for instance, because little kids do that. You see very small children having parallel play and being quite happy in that arrangement, and that meets the needs for couples, for both freedom and involvement with each other, and depending on, you know, how important it is for you to have your spouse involved in all of your activities, you might decide that you're going to have quite different lives, and there are a lot of advantages to having parallel play activities, because you can bring something to the relationship by having independent activities, but it also raises feelings of jealousy and, you know, how is he spending his time and criticism that this is not a good use of time and so on. So that issue takes sometimes a lot of talking and time to work through.
Maybe I should introduce again our guest for this hour of Focus 580, Dr. Marianne Vanderveld. She is a psychologist. She's also founder of the Seattle-based Institute for Couples in Retirement. And we're talking about some of the challenges and often unexpected challenges that couples face when they retire. If you would like to read more on the subject, she's written a book that deals with it, and it's titled Retirement for Two, and it's published by Bantam. It's out now, so you should be able to find it in the bookstore. And, of course, questions, comments are welcome. Maybe there are people who are listening and might like to tell us about some of their experiences, or they have questions to ask. Either way, that's great. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. I think all of this it's sort of layered on top of the changes that we have seen in the way people think about retirement. That is, people, and again, it may be a question of whether you have the resources to do it, but there are a lot of people who do and who retire earlier than perhaps previous, than their parents did, for example. They expect to live longer. They are, again, if they're fortunate, they will be in good health, and they will have, you know, different ideas about what retirement could be. And another important phase of life, a big chunk of life, that those kinds of expectations, I'm sure, again, you know, on an individual that places pressure because you're thinking about, you know, what do I want to do? But figuring out what you want to do and then the other person figuring out what they want to do and what we're going to do separately and what we're going to do as a couple, that's a lot of stuff to deal with.
It really is. And it isn't a question of what your socioeconomic status is. Surely that gives you more choices if you have more resources. But people who have limited incomes also have to cope with most of these issues. I mean, where you live, for instance, can be a shack someplace, but it still is a question of, are you going to stay where your children are? Are you going to explore a new part of the country or the world? I mean, all socioeconomic classes have most of these issues. And although it sounds like it may be related just to upper middle class people and above because of all the things that I've mentioned, it really hits everybody. And as you suggest, because people are out of jobs often earlier than they had planned. You know, age discrimination is a fact of life, and people are often being pushed out of jobs earlier than they had planned for retirement, or they're underemployed for many years because of that, and because of the fact that we are living longer and longer. We're going to be coupled for a lot of years without our usual routines, and we better find a way to make this a happy time. And if we're lucky enough to have a good relationship, or I would say a good enough relationship, we need to capitalize on that, because it is an adventure. It is a time when a lot of things happen to us, and that some of which are not in our control health-wise. And so we need some flexibility, both in the relationship and in our thinking, to get through this time happily. And I really think that that's the challenge for this time of life. In fact, I call it the task of this time of life is to grow whole, both individually and together. I mean, a lot of people have had a lot of excuses while they've been busy with work and raising kids and attending to relationships a little bit. They've had a lot of excuses for not really facing themselves and who they really are. I mean, we've all had a lot of facades as we go through life that are very useful. I mean, the facades that we have in the work setting, for instance, are very useful, and they develop for a reason. But this is the time to grow whole by really figuring out who you are, what you want out of life finally, giving up some of the unrealistic hopes and dreams, and getting some new ones, and becoming very intentional about life. And that means intentional about our significant relationships more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, is it the case that a significant number of couples, when they get to this point, actually end up, their relationship comes apart, they end up getting a divorce, and that's why? Because they can't, it's not necessarily that their relationship was so problematic, but that it's related to the kind of stresses that can come with going into retirement together?
Yes, I think that really is a major issue. In fact, let me digress a minute and tell you about the statistics mm-hmm. about divorce. I was really surprised to find that in 1970, 80, and 90, the divorce rate for people 55 and over was under the divorce rate for the general population. But as of 2000, the divorce rate for 55 and over is actually higher than the general population. So it's climbing, and I think that has to do with women having more financial resources, women's roles being different. But also, people really are, I think all over the world, there's even a study in Japan that this is happening. People are coming to retirement and looking at each other and thinking, you know, I don't really know this person. I don't really like this person. Do I want to spend the rest of my life with this person? And very often it's a question of sort of waking up from the blinders that you have on during your working years, because you're just so busy and you realize that you don't have time to really think too much about this relationship. And as I said, those little annoying things were just little at that point, but now they're big because they're hitting you in the face all the time, like you know, a spouse who smokes too much in the house, or a spouse who yells at the TV too much, or things that were, you know, annoying before now become really major, and people are thinking, well, this is not the way I want to spend the rest of my years. And so I think it is becoming a major point of divorce, and I also think that it's a major point of people thinking maybe we could use some professional help. Maybe they haven't thought about that before, but I have a chapter in the book about how to approach professional help, how to shop for it, how to get the best you can, and how to think it through. I also have questions at the end of every chapter, because I think people need to find ways to bring the issues home for themselves. You know, how do I feel about money? How do I feel about sex? How do I feel about the kids? And all of these things you need to sort of force yourself to think about. Sometimes, you know, you just have this vague kind of unrest and you don't know what's wrong with your relationship, but you can use some of these tools to figure it out and hopefully avoid the divorce that happens to a lot of couples.
Something that I mean, I realize we've already talked about this, but I guess it in my mind looms as a significant issue is the issue of whatever we do, how much time we spend together and how much time we spend apart. And I'm sure that there are a lot of couples who like each other, who like being together, who during their working life would say that was one of their causes of I don't know, dissatisfaction. I'm not sure that's the right word, but the fact that they would like to be able to spend more time together and have some fun together, but there's always something that needs to be done, and then there's the job demands and stuff. So that I'm sure that for a lot of people, there is this expectation that when retirement comes, we're going to be together. We're going to do stuff together.
Right.
And as you said, that sure, you will want to do things together, but that you shouldn't think that everything has to be done together. And in fact, that for people, they can pursue their individual interests, and they could be doing that. And maybe they can still be together, you know, within each other's sight. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing everything together. And it sounds like that's a tough thing to negotiate that and try to figure out how much time we want really truly to be together and how much time it's okay to say, okay, you go and do whatever you want to do and I'll go do what I want to do and I'll see you later.
Right, right. Well, very common thing is where one of them loves golf, for instance. And I have a couple stories in the book about couples where the husband said, well, you know, whatever I spend on golf, you'll have to do whatever you want to with. And at first that looked like it was a good arrangement, but then the wives in these two stories spent it on things that the husband didn't approve of and did things with it that looked foolish and wasteful. And so they had to renegotiate that pattern, and actually the husband in one case stopped playing so much golf because he hated what his wife was spending the money on, or in another case he was not truthful about the amount of money. And so even something like golf, which can be a great recreation in retirement, either together or alone, can turn into a problem. But you know, there are just so many variations on that theme. I think a lot of couples who really do like each other start out thinking, well, we're going to get in our Winnebago and drive across the country, and for 3 years we're going to just see the world. And they think, well, this will be fun and games. This will be just great. And they find that suddenly their whole life revolves around each other. And then they don't necessarily really realize how that's going to feel. There are a lot of things in life, you know, that we think we're going to feel a certain way about, and when they actually happen, we feel a little differently. And so you just have to really be conscious of how that's feeling for both of you. And it is rare, I think, for two people to feel exactly the same in terms of togetherness. Usually one of them wants more downtime or alone time or whatever, and feelings get into that. And so, you know, the idea that you're going to know ahead of time exactly what's going to feel right is kind of unrealistic. And you have to be, older people are known for their rigid thinking, you know, and very often we go through life with one person having more power than the other in a relationship. And often that's based on economics. The one who earns the most has tended to determine where we're going to live, what kind of cars we're going to drive, and so on. And you get into this retirement mode, and equality is really necessary in retirement, because for no other reason that one of you is going to be left alone at some point, and you better have some equality in that relationship, or that person who's left is going to really be at loose ends, and not only financially but emotionally. So it's really important to not force ourselves to think more flexibly than rigidly. And the roles that existed before just don't work anymore. You know, in the workplace, it's important to be tough, and it's important to make decisions quickly, and it's important to to be a leader, and all of those things that have worked for us during our working years don't work very well when your major the major aspect of your life is going to be this relationship for the rest of your life. And if one of you tries to take charge, you're probably going to be sorry. I mean, even simple things like cooking and laundry and paying bills, all of those things need to be negotiated again because they may have been based on time before, but now you both have time, and assuming that you're both retired at the same time, which is a big assumption these days, but all of these things need to be renegotiated. So, you know, not only are you spending a lot of time together, but your roles and your tasks and they just can't be the same as they were before, or it's going to be a pretty unhappy marriage for one of you.
We have a caller here, would welcome others. Let's talk with this listener in Lafayette, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I wonder if you address the question of, well, first of all, since a wife is often likely to be younger than her husband, what happens when the husband retires first, just when the wife is approaching a high point in her career? And another issue, perhaps you could mention, what about the couple with high plans for retirement together, and then suddenly one of the spouses turns suddenly and permanently ill?
Mm-hmm.
What happens in these cases?
Well, in the first situation, this is more and more a phenomena of today's working world, that husbands tend to be a little bit older than wives, and wives tend to hit their stride, I think, in their 40s and think more about career in their 40s than ever before. So they go into their 50s kind of charged up about their careers, I think. And many people are what I call half-retired. Many couples, one retires, and it's often the man because of the age factors and other things. And he's usually thrown into a situation that he's not prepared for at home. Not only does he have a lot of time on his hands and he's alone a lot, but the wife expects him to do some cooking and clean up the house and to do things that she used to do before when he was working. So that is an interesting phenomenon. And not only is it just the working world, but the paths seem to cross somewhere in the 40s and 50s, that women become more driven, more career-oriented, more goal-directed, whereas men who've been so focused on their careers start to think, is this all there is? And they look at other aspects of their lives and their relationships with their wives and their kids and their friends, and they want to invest more in that relationship. And so their paths, both emotionally and work-wise, kind of diverge. And it is a time for a lot of shakeups in relationships. But if the wife is still working and the man isn't very happy with that situation, one way to look at it is this is temporary. I mean, eventually she's going to be retired too. And why not make this kind of an adventure to see what roles can change? I know one situation where the man liked cooking so much that he literally began to push his wife out of the kitchen when she would come in. And he just kind of got charged up by that role and some others. So the way to look at that really is that this is an adventure, probably a temporary one. Let's see how we want to shake up our lives here. And the other thing that you bring up, which is very important, is health issues. I mean, we all assume that we're going to have these wonderful retirements as long as both people are healthy. But health is really a crapshoot. And as we get older, of course, we can do a lot of things prevention-wise to help ourselves in the health area. And that's where couples can really remind each other about eating right and exercising and being healthy, and can be helpful to each other in that area. But if one really becomes sick, the other then is really obligated to take on a caretaker role and to help that partner through the medical maze. I talk a lot in the book about how difficult it is in the medical system if you don't have an advocate. And that's the beauty of being a couple at this stage of life, to have someone to help you through this medical maze. And the caretaking role is a very difficult one, but there are sources of support. This is something that happens in all relationships, that we don't know which one of us is going to need help from the other, and that's your task.
Does the spouse suddenly thrust into the role of caretaker always respond this well?
Well,
does he sometimes resent the new situation and perhaps the wife?
Well, no doubt about that. I mean, it's not, that's human nature to resent, and especially if it's, you know, because they feel that their partner has not taken good care of himself or herself, you know, but even if you're not pointing to those factors, it's hard to adjust to that caretaking role. There is help available, and there are ways to get some of the good parts of retirement, even with a partner who's not very well. I mean, that partner then also has to participate as much as she can in the things that, the hopes and dreams that both of them may have had. But if it's truly, you know, a downhill situation, then you have to try to adjust, because it could happen the other way around. You know, you'd have to think about what would I expect from my partner if I were the sick one? And, you know, how can I rise to the occasion? And it's another life passage, I guess, to be able to be helpful. But certainly you need some support, and you need to engage your friends and your family and not try to do it all yourself. That's the hard part, I think, if you just really let that tear you down, because you have needs too, and the person who is the healthy one needs to get nourishment to survive in that role.
Does that get it to your question?
I think so. It's clear that friends and family certainly help out, and caretakers everywhere need such help.
Absolutely, yeah. You can't do it all by yourself, but it is a burden in life that comes to many of us, and particularly in long-term relationships, you should have, you know, hopefully you have a reservoir to draw on that will get you through some of the tough times.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions are welcome. We're a bit past here, the midpoint, and I should introduce again our guest, Dr. Marianne Vandervelt. She is a psychologist and founder of the Seattle-based Institute for Couples in Retirement. She's contributed to a number of publications, New York Times, Fortune, Forbes. She's been interviewed and appeared on a lot of different programs on radio and television. She's the author of the book Retirement for Two, Everything You Need to Know to Thrive Together as Long as You Both Shall Live, and it's published by Bantam. And basically, it looks at the fact that sometimes people who are going into retirement, couples who are going into retirement, face challenges that they hadn't really thought very much about. We probably all tend to think about the financial issues, and those are important issues for people who are retired. But there's a lot of other things, too, that just have to do with the fact that now you have a lot of time. You have to decide how you're going to spend it, and you have to decide how you're going to relate to one another. And there are a lot of changes that come at that point. So if you're interested in reading on the subject, if you're there or if you're approaching it, you can look at the book. And, of course, questions here on the show are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I'm sure that there are couples who would could say in all sincerity, that partners who would say that my partner is my best friend. And that's wonderful. But I wonder how many people come to retirement, and particularly once they have broken their connection with the workplace and the people that they know in the workplace, suddenly realize that they don't have any friends, perhaps other than the partner. And that's a big burden for the other person to have to take on.
It certainly is. And it's particularly men who talk about my wife is my best friend so proudly. And it is wonderful to think that this is a relationship that you can share, you know, anything with, and that is something to be positive about. But we need other friends in life, and women tend to be better at making and keeping friendships outside of the marriage than men do. And one of the things that people are shocked about when they retire is that the people that they thought were their best friends in a work situation don't always turn out to be that way after the work world is over. I mean, we're really sometimes quite shocked that that people don't respond to us the same way anymore when we lose our working power, and our world around us really changes, so that people who traded on their let's say, their image and their careers can't really plan on those being those relationships being the core after they retire. So it's important as we go along in life, you know, to have friends outside of the working world, both men and women, but it is common for men to have neglected those relationships and to find themselves suddenly the day after the retirement party saying, well, what are we going to do today? And they find that their wives, and sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes guys have developed, you know, fishing partners or golfing buddies or whatever, and they find themselves, one of them having a lot more relationships outside of the marriage than the other. So a jealousy kind of ensues, and criticism of friends. Well, why are you wasting time with so-and-so? They're not helping you. Or you know, the whole idea of why do you need anybody else? You know, I'm perfectly capable of being your friend. But one of the things that I think becomes more and more apparent as we get a little older is that we get nourishment from a lot of different sources, and that's why, you know, things like hobbies and activities are very important to all of us, and to have passion about something is really crucial as we age. But friends can be a big part of that. And often, if you have couple friends, for instance, you really love one part of the couple, but you're not so crazy about the other part of the couple. So you may see a lot of couples, but you also need individual friends and people who kind of nourish your soul. So, you know, the friendship thing is complicated. To be each other's best friend is fine, but life is really richer if you have other relationships as well. And if you nourish those relationships, you find that you can also bring things to the partnership that you wouldn't otherwise bring. So, you know, it's really important to focus on not just on being each other's best friend, but on having a variety of relationships in your life and nourishing those as well.
And there's another issue here that I'm thinking about, and I don't know that this is, it necessarily falls into this same category we're talking about here, because we're talking about couples' relationship with one another. But one thing that I'm a little bit interested in having you talk about is retirement and its effect on how on couples' relationship with their children and other family members. And I guess this comes from the experience of having parents who retired. And sometimes some of us kids joke that they forgot what it was like to have a job, because suddenly one of the things that they think that should be happening in retirement is that they should be spending more time with their children.
Right.
And, of course, the children have jobs, and they're still dealing with the same stresses. And they can remember the time when somehow the parents seemed to be so overscheduled that you had to make an appointment to see them. Well, now they got lots of time on their hands, and they think that they should be seeing you. And you're dealing with the same stuff, you know, you're dealing with kids and you're dealing with your job and you're dealing with your life. And sometimes it can be difficult to deal for the kids to deal with the expectations of parents that now we're all going to be spending, you know, it's not just husband and wife saying we're going to be spending time together. It's mom and dad saying, oh, great, isn't now we can spend a lot more time with you, or you can spend time with us.
Yep. That's really an interesting issue, because you put it well about forgetting that they once had jobs. I think people in retirement age have a lot of expectations of their children, and their children have expectations of them. These really need to be discussed, and they really need to be, there needs to be honest communication about this. It can be at either extreme. Let's say that the parents as you suggest, don't have much of another life outside their family. Let's say that they, you know, I hear people say, my children are the most important thing in the world to me, and I will devote the rest of my life to taking care of my children and making sure that things are all right with them. Well, that can be kind of a cop-out because that can look easier than investing in the outside world, doing volunteer work, doing making other friendships that maybe you hadn't nourished before, you know, having something that is meaningful just to you alone. That looks kind of scary to some people. So they reinvest in their kids, or they really overly get involved with their kids, and they're on their kids' doorsteps all the time. And on the other extreme, for the parents, they think, well, my job is done with my kids, and they're on their own, and I'm off in my Winnebago or whatever, and I've earned this, and my life is going to be for me from now on. And they just forget that they have relationships there that you know, that need to be tended sometimes too, and need to maybe evolve into a different stage. And so that's the two extremes on the parent side. And on the children's side, the adult kids' side, the kids on one extreme will say, well, you know, I'm busy. I have no time for my parents anymore. And I'm, you know, they can manage on their own, not realizing that those emotional ties are very strong and there are needs on both sides. And then on the other extreme, adult children can still be very overly dependent on their parents. They want their parents to be available to babysit whenever they choose. They expect that, well, let's say their parents have a little extra money now because they are retired and they have a little nest egg they've saved up. Well, why don't they share some of that with us? You know, here we are struggling, and our kids can't go to private schools. And you know, why don't my parents pay for tuition to the private school? Or, you know, why don't they share some of their resources with us? So, you know, there's a whole gamut of expectations on both sides, and that's a source of real trouble. I have a story in the book about a couple who decided their three children had somehow all ended up in Portland. And so they decided that they would leave their home, sell their home in the Bay Area, leave their friends, leave their clubs, and really focus, get a city apartment in downtown Portland and focus their lives on this new city and their three children, two of whom had children of their own. Well, it turned out it was really the wife who wanted this much more than the husband, and he really missed terribly his business roundtable and his golf club, and she was totally engaged with her grandchildren and had few other interests in life and became rather boring to him. And so they really were shaken up by what had they done, how had this changed their lives, and they ended up with a second home in the desert, which allowed him to reconnect with some of his golfing buddies and allowed them to actually have some time apart. I mean, she would not go as much to the desert as he wanted to go, but that worked out okay, so that she was ending up having more time with grandchildren that was comfortable for her, but not with him. And they found a way to work it out. But they really thought that their marriage was falling apart because they had made this terrible mistake of over-investing with their kids. And, you know, it's just a myriad of things that can get involved in that parent-adult-child relationship that can mess things up unless you are really honest with each other about expectations. And if either side expects too much, somebody has to talk about it. You just have to force yourselves to talk about it and figure out a compromise, because usually there is a compromise that will satisfy all parties. But if you don't talk about it, people get really, the whole relationship can be destroyed in that process.
Let's talk with someone else here who's listening. Caller in Charleston, line 4. Hello.
Yes. I'm interested in the program, David. Very good, the retirement and the older generation. And my retirement of 10 years, I left work, regular work, 10 years ago, kept a part-time job, still have one on call, which I have to do today, but with a full life, I've raised 7 children and 25 or so grandchildren, great-grandchildren, but that does not remain the focus. The focus is one's own life. Not to be self-interested, you know, I'm interested in many things, but one cannot be self-absorbed or absorbed by others, has been my experience. And that is, I suppose, what makes life livable if you have a meaningful life. And you can't transpose, it'd be so simple to get a couple of grandchildren whom you dote on and then begin to them be the focus of your life. Well, that's not fair to the others. So you have to strike the median, whereas you can be happy. And one last thing, I'm in a second marriage now, which is 25 years old. We commuted for 10 years. My wife lived in another state, and I remained here in Charleston. Every other week, we commuted back and forth, and that worked for 10 years. And then she moved here and now works north. So all those things being cumulative, it has been a rich and full life, one that I don't like to contemplate leaving, really, and I'm 70 years old. And it's just one of those things that making every day the best that it can be and look forward to that. And the last thing is I empathize with a lot of retirees is the health insurance thing, which is a social issue, and old folks shouldn't be burdened with that. You know, those sorts of things should be in line, so we cannot, will not have to be focused on that. You know, if I get sick, what happens to me? So I appreciate the program, and I'll ring off.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Well, that caller raises some interesting issues.
Mm-hmm.
One is that in a second marriage, things are slightly more complicated, maybe more interesting, maybe more rich. Having the commuter marriage for 10 years, they probably realized in those early years how to live somewhat separate lives and how to blend them in a way that was satisfying, you know, for both of them. Sometimes people take each other very much for granted in long-term marriages. And this is really the time to undo some of that, to figure out now who really are you, who really am I, and finding both the pleasure in oneself and finding what one's own passions are. Sometimes we find, you know, at 70 that our passions are really what they were at age 10 or 15, and going back and digging those out can sometimes be very exciting. But the other issue of health insurance, I do talk about some in the book, because this is one of the things about losing work that people don't always realize ahead of time, particularly if it's before 65 when Medicare kicks in. It is really, you are out there alone in the health insurance market, and it's one of the things that you lose along with a job. I mean, there are some jobs, of course, that don't have health insurance, so you've been dealing with this all along. But very often you're out of a corporation at, let's say, 55, and you have no idea what a morass the health insurance market is, and you've got to figure it all out for yourself, and you've got to pay a lot of money to insure yourself to the point that you were probably under the corporate umbrella. So that's a shock and a big cost. And then even people think, well, if I get to 65, I'll be home free. And then they're shocked to find out that Medicare doesn't cover a lot of things. And so you probably have to have some supplemental insurance as well. And you've got to figure that process out for yourself. So once you are without work, you lose not only the income from work, but you lose the relationships from work. You lose the security, your place in the world that you've had, and you usually lose your health insurance as well. And that's just one of those many factors. As the caller says, it's a social issue, but it becomes an individual one when you're out there sort of on your own trying to figure it all out for yourself.
We know we're almost out of time. Just one issue, and unfortunately I can only give you about a minute or so to talk about, but I do want to touch on is conflict management, because certainly in all couples there will be conflict, and being able to management may make the difference between staying together or not. Is it any different when you get to be in the retirement age than when you're younger?
I think communication is always hard, but because you're kind of struggling to find a new footing for yourself as a retiree, you really do need to communicate in a different way and in a really solid way. And I think it's important particularly to listen with that third ear, which means you search for the context and the meaning in the communication. And you really have to try with your partner to hear what's behind this, what kind of hurts are behind this, what kind of hidden messages are behind what's really said and what may be said. And either extreme anger or either extreme withdrawal is not healthy. But if you really try to listen to your partner and you try to get beyond some of the gender issues that we all have, you can hear things that you would not ordinarily have heard.
Well, we will have to leave it at that because we've come to the end of the time. And certainly, as I mentioned, if you'd like to read more on the subject, you should go out there and look for the book that we have talked about. And again, the title is Retirement for Two, Everything You Need to Know to Thrive Together as Long as You Both Shall Live. It's published by Bantam by our guest, Dr. Marianne Vandervelt. She's a psychologist and founder of the Seattle-based Institute for Couples in Retirement. And thank you very much, Dr. Vandervelt, for talking with us.
Thank you.
Our program, Focus 580, made possible today in part by grants from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign and Crossroads Global Handcrafts, 428 North Main in Bloomington, offering a collection of products from more than 30 third world countries, from Vietnamese ceramics and textiles to Bolivian musical instruments and international home decor. Tomorrow morning on our program in the 10 o'clock hour, David Sinha will be here with us. He's been gone for a couple of months this summer. But generally speaking, when he is around, he stops by every month. On a Friday, we talk about money management and personal finance. So if you have financial planning questions having to do with investment, maybe you're thinking about retirement, or you're thinking about making sure you have the money to send your children to college, or you know whatever it is, he can help to give you some advice on how you can make those decisions. And in the second part of the show, the guest will be Michael Holt. He's professor of American history at University of Virginia, and we'll be talking about some of the politics that led up to the Civil War, particularly the debate over the extension of slavery into the West. He has written a book on this that's titled The Fate of Their Country, Politicians, Slavery Extension, and the Coming of the Civil War. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We are here weekday mornings, 10 to noon, 10 different topics every week. We always welcome your questions, and we hope you'll stay tuned now because coming up next is the Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is the host, and we talk about some computer issues at 1 o'clock.
That we will do. Following the 1 o'clock news this afternoon, I will welcome telephone calls for Greg Klein. He's the science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. We'll talk about computers this afternoon following the 1 o'clock news. It's a program we do once a month on the third Thursday of the month. We call it Computers and You. Let's take a look now at what's happening on the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. September week.